Anyway, the Twin Otter came up and got us, landed and picked us up and flew us back to the Canadian. Anybody ever been to the Canadian Arctic? I always wondered about that. What does it look like north of Yellowknife? Wow, Canadian Arctic. Anyway, we landed at a place called Alert, which is the last piece of dirt before you have to step on the ice to go to the North Pole. And let me tell you that my curiosity for the Canadian Arctic has been fully satisfied. Canadian Arctic. Anyway, a much better chapter in my book. We had a good time. And nobody got hurt. Now the news media found out that Dick Rutan had crashed at the North Pole. Well, the news media went bananas, see? And so they couldn't find us and interview us because we're a long ways away. So what does the news media do? They got to find the family members, right? And they get you on camera, you know, and you say, oh, guys, crashed at the North Pole. Ooh, you know, and just pretty anxious. Well, they went up to Bert, and Bert says, hell, I didn't even know he was gone. And my wife is teaching kindergarten, see? And so they went to the school, and they wanted to go down to her class. And anyway, the principal sent them down, and she wasn't concerned at all. And it just drove him nuts. I said, you know, aren't you worried? You got to be so emotion here. If you're not emotional, this is terrible. And she said, the weather's fine, nobody's hurt. He said, Dick is having a hell of a good time. Which he was. And so the media was really frustrated about that. The third one is a rocket plane that we flew in Mojave. Now, the airplane, it was a damaged Long Easy. It was repaired and modified for a rocket motor. You know, liquid fuel and alcohol. A pure rocket. And we found out that this was the first rocket plane to fly since Hitler was shooting them down in World War II. You know, the ME-163, I think it was called. And there had never been another rocket plane that flew since then. Except for one airplane, and Chuck Yeager took the X-1 with a small fuel load, and he took it off in the dry lake. But that's the only incident that a rocket plane had ever flown. Now all the other rockets, they cheat. They haul it up in a big bomber or something and drop it. And but we don't call those really rocket planes. They cheated, you know, they had somebody carry them up there. Now, in the story I want to tell, it's got a good outcome, but there's really a lesson learned about this particular event. And I'm going to show you the rocket flight inside and outside the cockpit and the dead stick landing where Mike Melville chases me back and we land. Now, if you fly a rocket plane, you got a lot of thrust. It's like high school sex. Boy, it's really great for a short period of time. And then when it's over, it's a dead stick. See, I never thought about that. That's kind of, but you get the point. So it's really exciting when you light the rocket chambers and off you go. Now, I did a videotape of this. It's called Decision Making. And about everybody makes decisions almost every moment of your life. Well, I'm going to have a hamburger or a hot dog, or what kind of socks am I going to put on today, or what. And some of them are really minor things, you know, what you wear and what's your food. All those are minor things, but you continue to make decisions. And as pilots, we have responsibilities for our airplanes and for our passengers and so forth. And some of the decisions that are made are not very good. And I try to analyze a lot of those things, decision making and why they make those decisions and what situation you put yourself in. You ever heard of get-home-itis? That's why I got here yesterday. Because I'm scheduled to do this, and I've never missed a schedule. And I thought, if I try to fly in today and there's bad weather, because I have to get there, I'm gonna probably make a bad decision, whether I want to or not. And so the only way to not do that is to not put yourself in that position to start with. Now, people make decisions as pilots. I guarantee you that if somebody's pointing a camera at you, you're gonna do something stupid. You know, look at me. Or some of the young aerobatic pilots. They do, I call it air show-itis, and it's fatal, and the older guys know better than that. But the perception is from a young, inexperienced air show pilot is that he perceives that unless he's impressing himself, that he's impressing the audience. And the reality is the audience doesn't know any difference whether he's doing a safe flight or he's really pushing the margins himself. The only thing that the audience knows is that the guy is trying to do that, impress somebody, which they're not impressed, that he goes out and busts his tail and the whole audience says, what a dumb guy, you know, he did a stupid thing. So it's airshowitis. Stay within your parameters. And decision making, you know, it's a lot. In fact, I made a DVD about the whole thing, how the brain works and how the emotional part. You know, the guy goes into a store and he's going to buy a new car and he looks at the sticker and he says, oh, God, you know, I can't afford that. Look at how much I make and this and that. I can't afford this thing. But then the salesman comes over and he says, hey, buddy, how'd you like this car? Well, so he gets you in it. And you sit in there and you think, wow, man, I'd look good in this ride. Then all of a sudden your analytical part goes away and the thing that screws up a whole bunch of decisions is the emotional thing. And then you say, I'd look good. And you forget about the fact you can't afford it and he's made a car sale. And this happens all the time. The analytical part of who you are and also the emotional part that'll screw up a good analytical part. But that's how we're made. Okay, in this particular case, when you do flight tests, now my brother come up with a philosophy when the first day I got there, great philosophy for flight tests. And he says that there's a correlation between sex and flight test. The correlation between sex and flight test. And I says, what? What do you mean? And he says, flight tests should only be done in privacy with the required participants. To violate either one of those will degrade the performance. You agree with that? Sex and flight tests. So we do it in private. We don't invite the press up to watch something we've never done before because then there's a pressure. If something isn't just right, most of the time when you do rocket flights, you know, maybe one out of eight times you go to the end of the runway, you actually fly. So the pressure of making a bad decision. But we were doing it like sex. Nobody knew we were out there. There was no any external pressure to make sure that we're going to fly that day, and we made sure that everything was perfect before we flew. And then they had the idea. We are going to have a press day. We are going to have a public demonstration of a rocket-powered airplane in Mojave. And we're going to do it 2 weeks from now on this date and that time. And I knew right then that, Dick, that was probably going to be the most dangerous flight you'll ever fly. Because you'll be under pressure to do something that you would not normally have done. You know, Tony LeVere, he's my all-time hero test pilot. He lived a full life. He died in his 90s in bed. And all the things that that guy did. I says, Tony, how in the world did you ever survive that long? You know, look at all this stuff. P-38s, World War II, U-2, F-4s, jumped out of a T-bird. And he thought a minute and he says, Dick, here's the best advice I can give you. He says, if you're a test pilot, don't be concerned about the high risk stuff. Because everybody knows it's high risk. And there's engineers and everybody looking at every detail and attention and so forth, and they analyze everything to death. He says, that's probably the safest flight you'll ever fly. But the most dangerous flight you'll fly is when you're going to go out and do sawtooth climbs or something that's really mundane and hard and boring. He says, Dick, you treat that flight like you would the most dangerous flight that you've ever flown. And every once in a while, I'm going to fly my airplane to the next airport to get some cheap fuel. And it's just a short flight. So you hop in, I didn't even pre-flight, and then Tony's voice in the back of my head said, Dick, this is probably the most dangerous flight you'll ever fly. And I get out and do a thorough pre-flight. And an unscripted flight is very dangerous too. If you go out and you're just doing something unscripted, and you don't have any real plan and you're kind of curious and without even knowing about it, you get yourself in a horrible situation. Anybody ever heard of Steve Fawcett? He went out on an afternoon joyride and he never came back. An unscripted flight. 2 weeks went by and they're working on the airplane and they're getting ready with all their publicity tents. Now everybody's doing the publicity thing and the airplane and so on. I was really worried about the airplane. And I really sweated that morning. I woke up and was going to check the winds. In Mojave, we have some really strong winds. And at 9 o'clock, an hour before takeoff, it was ideal conditions. We'd done all of our training on a big, nice, long runway. We knew how to dead stick it. We'd practiced the whole thing. And that morning, between 9 o'clock and when we were going to fly, about a half an hour later, The winds came up at Mojave from a direction that they'd never come from before. Never blow in that direction, at least not this strong, almost 25 knots. First of all, it denied us the big, nice, long runway. And even with a huge crosswind component, we had to take off on a short runway going over town. And I'm standing there and I know what's happening. All of a sudden, I found myself in a position to make a stupid decision. Had this press not been there, we would have just packed it up and went back and drank coffee that morning. But see, the outside influence to set you up for something, and I knew that was going to happen. And I'm out there, and they even towed the airplane out to the end of the short runway. And I was shaking my head. I says, look at the winds, you know, this is ridiculous. We're putting the townspeople in jeopardy. They're coming down with a strong crosswind. I got to dead stick this thing like that. We never practice on this runway. And he looked at me that day with just crying in his eyes. Now, he's not a pilot, but he looked at me and he says, Dick, please, you got to go. It's my whole company. I have investors here. And if we can have these people come up here and we can't fly this thing, I may lose my company. I may lose all my employees. Please, Dick, you got to fly this thing. See what happened? Test and flight, sex and flight test. And so I made a dumb decision. Play the video.